Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Indest, your host, and this week we're talking with Matt Crossland. And Matt had a really cool idea to talk about, I think, what is one of both of our favorite records, The Grape Prophet by Ellis Underground. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. It's been good to gotten to see you in person a few times over the past few years of the work conference, because it takes me to New Orleans, but they moved it to Nashville this year, so unfortunately didn't get to see it this year.
Maybe next year.
Yeah.
Or we'll have that.
Nashville wasn't as fun as New Orleans.
Maybe we'll do a down the line convention somewhere.
There you go.
We'll have all our favorite bands there, and
we'll get 10 people show up. Yeah.
Who's that?
We'll get 10 people show up. Yeah.
Yeah. There might be a few of us there, but that'd be kind of cool. We've talked before, so I know for me, when I encountered this record, I was already a Christian, very excited when I first discovered Michael Knott through A Kiss of Life, which I don't know what year that came out, but maybe I was 15 or something, and I was just in love with that record. And then I was looking at the Noah's Ark Christian Bookstore, and I'm looking for stuff, and I'm like, LSU, is this the same? And I looked at the demo. I said, I think this is the same people. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it is. It's the same. And then it was, of course, a totally different thing. And then we get to The Great Prophet. So for me, I was already a Christian. I was already questioning a lot of stuff. And I kind of just was able to go through this chronologically. But you have a different approach to this music, right?
Yeah, I did not grow up in a church. A church of any kind. So the only Christian music that I was aware of was Stryper. Mm. Because they're on Headbangers Ball. And I actually got to see them in concert on my birthday in 1987. Not because I was a Christian, but because there were a few metal bands come through Waco. Waco, Texas. So, and then the next year, Metallica came through on their Justice for All tour, so all the metalheads went to that one too, So I just was not aware of this entire Christian music scene, and I didn't go to church until a series of events led me to pray the prayer, become born again, and started going to an Assembly of God church that some friends of mine from high school had also straightened their lives out, as they put it, and started going back to their childhood church. They grew up in this church, but kind of faded away, and then we all started going back there, and then they started, feeding me music, right, that was supposed to save me from the evil secular music, right, that I was listening to. And it was mainly a bunch of Christian metal from back in the mid-80s, which I still liked, but I had kind of moved on in my personal taste. I kept saying that I was looking for stuff that was more like Jane's Addiction or some of the heavier, darker stuff, and then they would give me like White Cross, I was like, yeah, that's good, but that's not what I'm looking for. And so I ended up in a Christian bookstore looking through all the tapes and CDs and not seeing stuff that I'd find until I found this compilation of the Blonde Vinyl compilation that Broken Records put out. And I was like, all these band names sound trippy, so I'm going to try this out. And so I bought the CD and I put it in, and LSU's track "Wine Over the Red Stain" just started blaring.
Oh wow!
I was like, "Oh, I've got to find this album." And little did I know that all the drama that had happened to that label tanking and the distribution dying, and it was just really hard to find. But I finally found one copy of The Great Prophet on tape somewhere, and I just loved it. I started soaking up all the other LSU stuff as well I could find, and that led me to you know, all these other trippy bands, and then, you know, discovering, you know, 77s and all these other ones. So it was, that was kind of my start on this, was hearing the Wynonna and the Red is Sane. And it's, you know, it's, you've heard it. It's a trippy song, you know, so, it's, you know, but it was, I don't know, something that just really connected with me kind of in the, you know, this kind of visceral feel that that song has, you know, and that was when I was hooked.
And that's interesting because that song, out of context, what in the world
exactly.
is this about?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's an odd one to, I mean, this album, if you have no idea what is going on, and hopefully maybe we'll be able to shed some light on that. If you just put the record on, you'd be like, I have no idea what's you know, coming to the fold, who is Colonel Pickassay, you know, there's all kinds of these, you know, yeah. weird things going on. It's kind of a strange journey, but you've done more research on this than I have. I know the only personal interest I had in this was I grew up in the Assemblies of God too, and then, you know, that was a charismatic kind of a thing, and there was a lot of openness, at least where I was going to church, to a lot of this prophetic stuff, and then there was an Assembly of God church here that's still here that was very open to it, and the only thing that I kind of got tied up in with this whole prophetic movement was, and I've said this before because it was just such a weird pivotal time in my life, but this girl I was dating, this guy, and I tried to find the tape because I think I still have it, of the prophecy that one of these guys gave this girl, telling her she was going to do all this stuff, which effectively, you know, ended our relationship because now, you know, this prophet's telling her she's got to go do all these other things. And it, I don't know, 17 or 16, like, or you don't know how to handle that. You don't know how to process this stuff. Yeah. Well, here it is on tape. Well, okay, I guess you're supposed to go to, you know, China or something, you know, whatever. So after a while, that's when I started getting kind of annoyed. Like, wait, this, you know, these guys are kind of, they're not prophets. And some of these prophecies were pretty vague. And then some of them, if you held them up to Old Testament prophet standards, they'd be stoned, you know? And when I was reading some of the material you sent me about the Kansas City prophets, which you, I'm sure you'll go into more detail about, concerning how this record's connected with that, they were saying, well, you know, we only have like an 80% success rate in prophecy. It'll get better and better. And I'm like, wait, it's not like golf, right? This is, you're hearing from God or you're not hearing from God. And in the Old Testament, if you didn't hear from God and you said you did, you were going to be stoned. So now you're, so maybe you are right 80% of the time. So you have the right to screw up people's lives 20% of the time. That's kind of jacked up, right? So I kind of grew up in this whole weird thing, and I know a lot of people my age kind of left because of that, because in some of the material you sent me as well talked about how it was extra-biblical revelation, and I know, you know, the interpreter, the English interpreter of English kind of a thing, what this really means, and these weird interpretations of text, and, you know, it's... if you think postmodern critics kind of mess with the Bible, that was nothing compared to what, you know, some of these guys were doing yeah. back in the day. So I know from what you wrote in the last Down the Line magazine, you were obviously a Satanist. So you come out of Satanism and atheism, or I don't know how you can be both at the same time, but a satanic. You were two of the worst things possible. Some people would die for yeah. that testimony. And then you became a Christian, and then you kind of get involved in this. I mean, that had to have been, you know, an interesting change, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I tell people I make my testimony sound a lot more interesting than it really actually is, which I think a lot of Christians are guilty of. But no, the thing is that I was searching. I felt that there was some kind of a spiritual dimension to life that I wasn't getting, or excuse me, that I wasn't, you know, tapping into. So yeah, I read a lot about atheism. I read a lot about Satanism. I read about Buddhism, Islam, several strains of Christianity. So yeah, it was just, for me, I was just trying to experience something in the spiritual side of things. And that was what helped me connect to this whole Assembly of God church my friends went to, because that's, you know, Assembly of God, as you know, had that strong charismatic flavor to it, I guess. I don't know if that's the right way to describe it, but where you are seeking that sensation. And that kind of forms kind of the context for the Great Prophet, because a lot of people will look at that and they say, well, why did this church in California let this random group of prophets from Kansas City come all the way there and say all these weird things in front of the church, right? It's kind of hard to explain to people, but there's this thing in the charismatic churches where they're always looking for these anointed speakers or musicians, sometimes they're using speakers to come in and give them the word of God, to spread the anointing, to bring about revival and all these kind of things. And I only got a little bit of that because I was only involved in Assembly of God for a few years before I got burned out. And then I went to a non-denominational church that was associated heavily with the Vineyard movement. We had a lot of the Vineyard leaders, a lot of people that you read about in the Kansas City Prophets, Mike Bickle and all them, would speak at our church and those kind of things. We would go to Vineyard conferences. And even a few years later, when I moved to Dallas, I went to a Vineyard church for a few years that was started by people who were involved with the Vineyard church in the beginning years. Back in California, they kind of moved as a big mass to Dallas, Texas, I think, to start a Vineyard church there.
What year was that?
That I went to church or the one that came here?
The one in Vineyard in Dallas, because I had spent some time in a Vineyard in Dallas back in the late 80s, maybe 1990, something like that.
I think that's when they were moved here. We were involved. This was 2010 when we became involved. It was actually a Vineyard in Arlington, Texas, by then. And they mentioned the Vineyard that was in Dallas. But Pastor Bob was the leader of this one. I don't know if he was involved with the other Vineyards that had popped up through the years in Dallas. I know there's been several that have popped up and gone away.
Interesting.
But yeah, we got a lot of tales from them about the early days of the Vineyard movement, and everyone from John Wimber to Bonnie Frisbee to Kevin Foss. Yeah, all kinds of interesting stories. But anyway, I think that's that whole idea of these traveling people that come to your church. Most people are like, okay, yeah, we have some higher up official in the church coming. Give us this, 5-minute welcome or something. But what's this deal with these prophets coming to your church? It's kind of a weird thing that you just see in the charismatic circles in some ways. Or that's just my impression as someone who didn't grow up in the church. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
No, I agree. I spent some time with some pastors last week doing some missionary stuff, and this kind of non-denominational guy rolled in, and the first thing he asked one of the pastors was, hey, can I come and preach at your church? And I'm like, that is just such a thing that, like, I don't know you.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're going to teach. I don't know what you're going to
say.
And you want me to let you have control of my congregation? For the pastor who wanted to come and talk, it was not a big deal. But this guy was like, no, I don't even know what you believe. That's not going to happen.
You just show up at your church one night, and here's this person talking. You're like, who is this? And the pastor's like, well, this is, brother, sister, so-and-so, and they're going to get to the door. You're like, I have no idea who this person is. Weird.
It really is. So this, for me, we've come at this from two different perspectives, which I just find fascinating. So for me, I grew up in the church. This was all normal. In fact, I came out of the Catholic Charismatic Revival, right? So even as a Catholic, we were speaking in tongues and there was healing services. And I would go to this weekend retreat thing that was at a former Carmelite convent. And even the Carmelites would supposedly levitate around the convent and stuff. So for me, this wasn't even – this was part of all Christianity, right? This idea of prophecy and healing and casting out of demons and all of this kind of stuff. And it wasn't until much later where I started – discovering some other forms of Christianity. But for you, this has got to be was it harmful to your faith to think about all this stuff, read all these different options, become a Christian, and then look at it and go, man, these guys are kind of screwed up? Was that a harmful thing for you?
Well, it depends on who you ask, I guess. Yeah, the people think I've gone off the deep end of embracing the world now or whatever they think, because I question things. Yeah, that's very harmful to my faith. For me, I don't know. I've always seen faith as something that you question and that has a lot of hard places that you just have to keep questioning, have to keep picking at, you know. I hate to use such a country term, but, you know, so at the time, it caused stress because there's a lot of stuff that you just couldn't question, right? And this is something that Mike Knott goes into about when he tried to question the prophets, he lost all his friends at the time. So the Kansas City prophets that had come to his church in California, when he questioned the crazy things they're saying, he lost all his friends. And that was the hard thing for me, is when you ask the question and people act like you have just spit in the face of God because you asked these hard questions, right? And that how dare you touch the Lord's anointed? How dare you look at these gifted people who've come all this way at their own expense? And of course, we're taking a love offering, right? That's going to give them thousands of dollars, but yeah, at their own expense, quote unquote, to, you know, share the love of the Word of God with us. So, you know, that was the hard part. The hard part that you couldn't ask hard questions and that you couldn't dissent and disagree with it, you know, without losing your entire community of faith there.
Yeah.
And that happened several times to me. So that really hurt my faith.
You also, I'm sure you've read some Rachel Held Evans stuff, but I mean, blood was boiling when I was reading some of the emails that people sent her, because I got the same thing. So, Brother Matt, it's not that you're questioning. It's that you have sin in your life, and the reason you're questioning isn't because you're actually intellectually curious. It's because you have some sort of sin in your life. So you need to go get rid of that sin, and then your questioning will stop, and you'll be able to live by faith. Well, that's – how do you handle that? How do you – I mean, you have no other option but to leave, right? Because they're not willing to deal with the situation. They're just, you know, blaming you. Or one email Rachel Held Evans said she got that was just – because I've gotten this before, just a quick – praying for you, and you know, like you know what that means. You know, they're not they're not praying for it. It's a condescending, move there. You got the great prophet, and I don't remember reading all of the liner notes, but I did know it was about the Kansas City prophets. I did know it was about not, but we've told our stories about how we came to this, but you reminded me of some things that I forgot about not that the first iteration of the Lifesavers, as they were called, was actually him and Chris Wimber, right? John Wimber's nephew?
Yeah. Son, I think.
Son, okay. And John Wimber wrote some really great songs. We still sing them in our church, Spirit Song. Yeah. And I mean, the dude was talented. So Knott starts a band with his son. So fill me in on this difference, because I thought these bands came out of Calvary Chapel, which still exists today, right? Chuck Smith passed away a few years ago, but you know, Terry Taylor redid the back part of Shotgun Angel, and Chuck Smith did the narration.
Yeah.
And so was not involved with Calvary Chapel and dove straight into the Vineyard, or how did that, do you know anything about that, how that changeover happened? Or
the Calvary Chapel and Vineyard at the beginning are very connected in different ways. I don't fully have all the details of, and so some of those lines are kind of blurry, I think. I there's probably someone's written about that. The stuff that I sent you was actually from a bootleg concert of Michael Knott. I used to trade a lot of those concerts, and as you know, Michael Knott, he tells a lot of stories about where his songs come from in the concert. And so I was listening to this one bootleg a couple of years ago, and he kind of tells the story of the great prophet and where, you know, how that happened. And so these were just notes that I kind of typed out. Because at some point, you know, I'd like to add these details to the Knotthead's website. But so this is from a concert story that he told. And basically he said that he was part of the Vineyard at this time. And he was friends with John Wimber because he played bass with Chris Wimber. I think Chris is his son. I have that wrong. But they were about 16 or 17 at the time. They were playing what Michael Knott called pseudo-punk rock songs at clubs and places. And so they put their first record out, the Us Kids record. And then John Wimber said that they're supposed to go around planting churches around the U.S. That is what God called them to do as a band. Michael said he didn't feel led to do that, so that's why he initially left the Lifesavers. So a few years later, he was at a church service, and there was this group of prophets that came from Kansas City there. There was this old guy, which I think someone that says Bob Jones is his name, was the great prophet. He was prophesying, and he said things that was like in the song, was kind of flowery and weird. And he said there was this other guy, he said he had furry, curly hair that he translated it like the English interpreter of English on the record. And my theory is that this guy was Mike Bickle, just because of the similarities between the way that they preach and the way that Mike Bickle has always sounded like a great prophet to me. Obviously, not the great prophet, the English interpreter of English, but I could have that wrong. And so Michael said that he didn't like what they were saying. He questioned it. Like you said, they asked him if he had the faith to believe, he would understand it. But it didn't work out. You know, Michael Knott's not one to back down from, you know, what he thinks is right, obviously. So they excommunicated him. Apparently, he lost all of his friends. He was leading a Bible study, and they all went to this prophet. And he said, like you said on the record, a friend of his girlfriend went to this like back room with a group of the prophets, and they told her that she would have become a hooker on Sunset Boulevard if he hadn't come into the fold, which is what they call their group of prophets. They call it the fold, which is just like creepy. And then, he writes a great prophet. He put this number in there. We could call this Christian Research Institute about this issue if you wanted more information about the Kansas City prophets. And then he decided to call it one day to see what they had updated it, and they sent us the material, and apparently John Wimber had repented of letting this happen in the church. He realized that there was a big problem with it. He said he was totally wrong for letting them. And they, you know, and apparently the Kansas City prophets went back to Kansas City and kind of fell apart. And there's still a church there, the International House of Prayer, and Mike Bickle's still there, and they're still around. But I think the Kansas City prophet thing kind of fell apart after that.
Interesting.
So that's kind of the historical. Yeah.
So one of the leaders had an affair, right, with two women? Is that the story?
Yeah, that's the official story is that that Bob Jones had inappropriate contact of some kind with two women that was not adultery.
Okay.
And they won't. Releasing the details, people that are around it have said that, yeah, it was adultery, but they're just trying to save face, you know. So that's all I know about that one.
Yeah, that's, that's interesting. And, you know, that comes with being in a powerful, manipulative place. But that's definitely not the first time, you know, that this has happened with, you know, someone using their status to or spiritual manipulation, you know, in order to gain sexual, touches or whatever, you know, you want to call it. So that's interesting. Did not say what he heard that he didn't agree with?
Well, I think he put a lot of it into the record as far as, a lot of people have questioned whether or not the things Michael Knott put on the Great Prophet actually are what the Great Prophet said and the English interpreter of English said. I tend to decline that they were, because Michael Knott has this habit of actually writing down what people say and putting in the song lyrics. You know, just listen to this song he wrote called Herb's Garage, right?
Yeah.
Where some drunk guy was rambling on one day at a bar, and he wrote down every word he said and turned it into the song called Herb's Garage, right? So, I tend to think that that what was said was really said, right? I think that it really did happen. The thing is, like, it's hard to explain to someone outside of the charismatic tradition, but it's like, yeah, people really do say those things, right? Like Mike Bickle. Have you ever heard a sermon by Mike Bickle?
No.
Yeah. He usually preaches on the Song of Solomon, and what he'll do is it's like you're listening to the extended 2-hour remix of the English interpreter of English song. Like, really, it's like hard to listen to. But he'll read a scripture from the Song of Solomon, and he'll turn around and say, he'll start with chapter 1, verse 1. He'll read it, and he'll say, you know, be all these, you know, flowery poetic verses. He'll turn around and say, I think that this is saying that God wants to have lunch with us, or, you know, whatever he says on the record. And he'll turn back and read verse 2, and he'll say, I think God is telling us that this is, and it's just all these weirdly connected translations of these very poetic, you know, scriptures. And so, you know, having, he goes on for like an hour and a half or so, and then he just starts crying at the end, right? And the Spirit of God falls, you know, you probably strains that a whole lot, you know, and then, you know, that's the end of the video, right? These are video tapes that people will pass around and watch. And so it's like, unless you actually see people doing this, it's like, yeah, people really do act like this. So I kind of got off track. What was the question again?
No, people do act like that. And I've heard so much of that, especially when what better book to go to than that, right? And
right.
I always laugh because when we'd have to do like Bible quizzes, I'd memorize scriptures from the Song of Solomon just to piss people off. Like if they'd be like, you know, everybody would have to, you know, say a verse that they memorized, and I'd memorize stuff like, your breasts are like clusters of fruit. Your stature is that of the palm. I will climb the tree and take hold of its fruit. You know, from the Song of Solomon, people would get mad. But what better book? I mean, we see people like Hal Lindsey doing it with the Book of Revelation. And, you know, but the song, I mean, you could make anything you want to out of the poetry out of that. So that's all you have to do is have people that are willing to listen and shell out the bucks to keep you going.
Yeah,
that's pretty interesting. To me, it's at this point, I don't get mad about it anymore, but I do get, it brings me right back to sitting in those sort of church services where there's prophets and being very frustrated and not knowing what to think or do. Because mm-hmm. people like in our church, and I was in the band, right? So, we'd play like three fast songs and then we'd stop. And then I was watching a thing. It was on Wild Wild Country. Have you seen that on Amazon? It's about a cult, the cult group. But they would do the same thing. They'd play all these, you know, they're these Indian songs really fast and everybody get fired up. Then they stop. And then you have like this wave of euphoria that rolls over you. And then you sing that third song slow for the last half. So it's this real physical thing, all this adrenaline, and then you just stop. And that's when, you know, two or three people would prophesy during that period. And sometimes they'd come and lay hands on you or whatever. But, this isn't unique to Christianity. Other people use it because it does give you this physical feeling. You know, it is kind of neat, especially if you're an adult and you really don't exercise much. It's very euphoric. You know, you're jumping up and down. You're doing the Pentecostal pile driver, you know, in one place without moving your hips or whatever you got to do. And then, when you watch stuff like the Toronto Blessing or the people getting drunk, you know, in the Lord, people would have like modesty blankets. And so like a lady would be all around, you know, and then she'd fall down and then these people would come and lay a modesty blanket over her so she doesn't, expose anything while she's on the ground, drunk in the Lord. It all gets kind of crazy, but it is all woven together, right? Because this ties in with the Toronto Blessing and then what was going on down in Brownsville, which was an Assembly of God church, I believe. Yep. So it's all interconnected in a very bizarre way. It seemed to me like the experience was searching after the gifts and not the giver. And
exactly,
we had so much of an emphasis put on, this is what we were taught in youth group. And this is another thing that just kind of, I wish we could curse on the podcast because that would probably explain things a little bit better just using words. But, you know, you think you're a Christian, you're struggling along as a teenager, and then you hear from the youth pastor, you might be saved, but you really are not fully committed to God unless you're filled with the Holy Spirit with the evidence of speaking in tongues. So, man, this pressure is just on.
Oh, yeah.
And then you would go there, and then you would practice. You know, they would get you started sometimes. You know, I lost the keys to my Honda. You know, have you heard that one?
Yeah.
To get going. And then you got
my bow tie.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's just this kind of thing. Again, speaking in tongues is not exclusively a Christian thing either. But you know, that's just hard stuff to deal with. Well, you're not fully surrendered to Christ. But there again, that's where the manipulation can come in. Well, Brother Matt, this is why you speak in tongues, brother? No. Well, that's why you're asking these questions, because you're not fully committed and surrendered to Christ. You need to fully surrender when you speak in tongues, and then these questions you have will go away. So there's this manipulation on multiple levels, and then this this searching for these gifts. That was the sign, right? It wasn't love, joy, peace, pain, you know, those sorts of things. It was speaking in tongues and be able to dance or act drunk or gold flakes falling from the ceiling or whatever it is. It's these very external gifts that people were searching for, which again, man, that just leaves you, if you don't have it, man, that just leaves you totally, you know, devastated, or could leave somebody totally devastated. And of course leave the church because of that, and maybe not even think they're saved, you know, at all. So that's the kind of stuff that it kind of brings up in me, was, you know, all of that time period. And I was grateful when I got not just that album from Michael Knott, but just to have people from like him or Terry Taylor or whatever singing things from a different perspective. That was always very refreshing, because that was the first stuff I heard. It was through music, right? When somebody was coming up with a different perspective. It wasn't through books, because we didn't have any of those books. And even the Christian bookstores today, they shy away from a lot of stuff. You know, Eugene Peterson, who just passed away a couple of weeks ago, I think, wrote the Message Bible. When he said something controversial a few weeks ago, boy, the main Christian bookstores went straight to him and said, "Did you really say this? Because if you did, all your stuff's gone." So I'm surprised some of this Christian music even made it in there. But thankfully, you know, there was stuff like even CCM Magazine that would review, you know, these records. So you'd get to hear that. And they reviewed, I remember Violent Femmes, The Blind Leading the Naked, and talked about Gordon Gatto's faith and stuff. And I was like, cool, you know. But that, you know, so there was, you know, you reach for whatever you could reach for. There was no down the line back then, you know, to find all the cool stuff. But yeah, this is just fascinating. So you said Knott found the Christian Research Institute, Hank Henegraaff stuff. Well, he's in it now. That might have been Walter Martin era, right? Back then, or
probably, yeah.
Yeah. And so he printed it without asking their permission inside of the liner notes. So that's, that's bold for Knott, right? Because most of his stuff, you kind of had to read through the lines a little bit. I mean, some of it's very obvious, Christ saves and stuff like that, but he seems like he never really, it seemed like a very punk rock anti-establishment move for Knott that you really don't see maybe in his other work. Am I wrong? You're the expert. You run the Knottheads website, but am I wrong about that?
At least on that era, yeah, he doesn't necessarily always point to those type of resources. That was one of the few, maybe the only one, but at least one of the few that I know of.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back over his 20 million records he put out, but that one just seemed like it really was. But there was other things going that came out in '92. You know, that whole era was kind of. Maybe he was compelled because some of the other music that was coming out by his comrades at that point, right? You had Balance of Power by Undercover. I think that was around that time period. Maybe that was 1990 or 91. Adam Again, right? Weren't they doing some pretty good hard rock stuff at that point? Kissers and Killers by the Choir. 77s was kind of going back to their Led Zeppelin roots or whatever. So I think there was – and, well, grunge was happening too, right? I mean – there's some obvious Jane's Addiction stuff going on with this record. She Said, I mean, that's you know, that's definitely a Jane's Addiction song. And is that song, this is the album with that kind of Thanks to the Chili Peppers thing in the liner notes, right?
Yeah, he said, with Apologies to the Chili Peppers.
Yes, yes.
A nod to them or something like that. Yeah,
for a song that sounds a lot like Give It Away or whatever. It's definitely influenced of its time. So, I mean, I guess we can't separate it from that. But people do love that record. You know, when Blonde Vinyl put out that Knott tribute, there's a couple versions of English Interpreter of English, and I'm sure that's the first song every band wanted to do, you know, was something off of that. So that was kind of cool. I listened to the record again last night and it definitely stands up, but I forgot who, I know Steve Hindelong does the voice of the English Interpreter of English, right?
Uh, No, he does The Great Prophet, I think, and Michael Knott does the English interpretation.
Okay. So, is Steve Hindelong playing drums, or is he doing... I know he's shaking something, because there's some unmistakable percussion. But
yeah.
Is this the regular Knott lineup, or was this different? The LSU lineup, or was this different? Brian Dodge, or what was going on?
Yeah, it's kind of like a whole cast of people on it, like 12, 15 people, I think. So, but it's got the usual LSU people that he's worked with, and then... there was the lady that was in Breakfast with Amy was on there. It's hard to pull up some credits on the computer real fast. They're not coming up too fast, but yeah, there's a whole cast of people on there.
Yeah, it's a good record, and it flows really well, right? It's very consistent.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell it's a very complete project. Very cool. Well, hopefully we didn't just, I doubt there's anybody just listening going, oh, I want to find, I'm sure the people who are listening are already interested in this. We don't really do much to attract new converts, I guess, right? I don't think there's anything about down the line that we do that, we're out there to attract the younger people or new people or whatever. But it has changed a bit since it started, and it is really cool. So just before we go, and we definitely got to keep this conversation going, but thanks first of all to Michael Knott, who was very gracious and very quick to reply to let us use these songs. So we'll put a link to where you can buy this album and check it out. And then also Matt is the king. What are you, the emperor of down the line? Whatever you make us call you,
grand CEO of Wyatt.
The grand CEO,
yeah.
And CFO. Somebody's got to count all the money we're making too. And then also Knottheads, which pretty much is the only game in town for Michael Knott, right? And it's a great source of information about all the records that he's done. And it's knottheads.com, is that right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but I can keep it going. It attracts a lot of spam for some reason. I have to continue to take it offline here and there to get that fixed. But I try to keep it up as much as I can. So.
Excellent.
It's kind of weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually get – so I have 6 Michael Knott paintings at my house and a few more that I've bought for other people. So I actually get some links to some of my music because people are looking to see 2 of those or album covers, right? So people are linking from Knottheads over to me to find out what I'm all about because of album covers that you've listed on the Knotthead. So I appreciate that.
Cool.
Yeah, that was kind of nice. I've got so many Knott paintings. I got one I have to kind of switch out because I don't have room for it in the house. Maybe one day if I do like a big Kickstarter, I'll use those as whatever rewards or something. But maybe we'll see. The one he did for the basement tapes was just killer. It's just fantastic.
And, I like that one. Yeah,
and they're very affordable too. So go check out what he's doing art wise, and he'll get you what you need. And he's done some custom stuff for me, and I know for Josh Laurie as well. So that's cool. And then maybe we'll do another part of this interview, and maybe I know I rambled a lot, but there's so much to talk about. Concerning this album in that whole time period. And what else do you have to say about Down the Line? Do you know what's coming out in the next edition?
No, we just did get a new edition out a couple of weeks ago. And it's always, we're very inconsistent because we're very, very volunteer-based. But I do believe we actually are planning to do a Michael Knott issue in the near future.
Okay.
To kind of catch up on what he's been doing recently. I know that there's going to be a vinyl reissue of Waking Up the Dead coming out in the next few months. They did a Kickstarter to fund that one. Josh Laurie, put that together. I know that I always hear rumors of him working on other stuff, so we want to kind of catch up with him on that. And then There's also rumors that someone may do a story on the early cheesy Christian rap music.
Oh, that'd be good.
And so that one should be pretty good. I don't want to give anything away too soon, but someone's been contributing some good articles for the past few issues, and I think he's going to turn another good one on that topic.
That would be awesome. I've got the Raptures on vinyl.
Yeah, the Raptures are going to be in there. Plain White Rapper, Michael Peace, the Rappin' Reverend. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see all shows up in that. And I don't think anyone else has actually committed to any articles yet, but we'll see what we can get. There's plenty of stuff to do. We just got to find people who have time to do it, you know.
Yeah, that's been – the time hasn't been the weird thing for me. It's honestly the interest. I've had I've been to several concerts, and I know I've said, hey, I'm going to write reviews, but I don't know how to process some of this stuff now. It's really difficult for me, and I definitely don't want to write anything negative. I want to promote what I like, but it's been really difficult for me to find a new way to relate to some of the music that we fundamentally cover. And until I can figure out exactly how to do that, I can't really write anything because it's just going to come off poor or in the middle of a thought process or something. And I don't really know what to do. I need to kind of get my thoughts together on how I feel things are moving or whatever, or find something really awesome to get excited about. And the other problem for me is I'm really getting into like really lo-fi music. And some of the stuff that, you can produce some really great stuff now, and people have, and I just really haven't been getting into slick production lately. I've been getting into a super, I bought a 4-track, and I've been getting into that. So that's the other reason why it's kind of difficult for me to relate. And everybody's in different stages in their life, and I'm relating to different music now than I did when I was a kid. And then some of the stuff I look back on and it's hard to, whatever. But I think I might do a review of the Simple Minds show I saw last week. They did two full sets, I think 33 songs. And they weren't stopping. And Jim Kerr said, we haven't played an extensive tour in the U.S. in 25 years. I thought people would forget us. And he said, walking around this arena, it wasn't an arena, it was a theater. Before the show started, I think I was right. There was like nobody there. we had these perfect seats, all to ourselves. And he's like, I don't care if there's just one person there. And they didn't shorten their sets, man. They played two full sets and a 3-song encore, and they really reached back. And their new album is really good, really good. So I need to figure out how to, how to kind of process that and talk about it in a meaningful way without being critical. So I don't know. I'm in a weird state, but I'm keeping the podcast going. So I'll keep something going. But that's the reason why I haven't really submitted or committed to anything. It's just I don't know. I don't know where I need to find my view on things before I start, yapping, because I don't want the 10 million people that read the magazine or listen to the podcast to hear something that I'm not, I haven't fully fleshed out. So, but if anybody else is out there and like, I'm really, I know what to say, we don't pay anything, but definitely send Matt an email, and new blood is always very welcomed for even new stuff or retrospectives. We just did a retrospective After the Fire that was super cool, or Matt did a wonderful lengthy piece on his involvement in Satanism in high school. Whatever you got that you feel is going to, it doesn't just have to be music. It can be anything, involving what we just talked about on this podcast or whatever, your journey of faith or whatever, bring it on, because it's very welcome.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, we're over time, and, thanks again to Michael Knott for letting us use these songs, and we'll do this again. And thanks a lot, Matt. Look forward to, fleshing out this conversation more next time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I had a great time. Thank you for having me. Look forward to the future.